Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. I'm John Manuel, joined by Aaron Fitt. Aaron, let's just get right into it. Second half of our Super Regional podcast, Super Colossal Breakdown. I'm very excited about Super Regionals, Aaron. I'm very excited to go to a Super Regional this year with Stanford at North Carolina. Let's break down the Super Regionals we're going to discuss on today's podcast. Virginia versus UC Irvine, that's going to be in Charlottesville. Dallas Baptist Cal, that's going to be in Santa Clara. Craziest Super Regional ever. Florida State, Texas A&M, that's going to be Land-Grant University Shakedown, Showdown. I'm still stuck in Bob Seger mode, apparently. And then and then UConn, South Carolina, and probably the most intriguing Super Regional as far as the talent on the field. That's going to be a fascinating Super Regional to watch. Let's start at the top, though, Aaron. Virginia, the national number one seed, still only has lost 9 games. We're in June, Aaron, and Virginia has lost 9 games, which is just crazy. I think Stanford had 9 losses, like, in March. Right. And then Virginia against UC Irvine. I think is it fair to say that – so you're on the West Coast. Is it fair to say that Mike Gillespie's Irvine team, and especially this Irvine team, which is, like, no prospects, all college grinders, is this, like, the sentimental favorite of people on the West Coast because of – Gillespie and because of the makeup of this club?
I think that's fair to say, sure. I mean, certainly them and Cal. You know, everyone's rooting for Cal, of course. But yeah, I mean, you know, people love Mike Gillespie. I mean, it's amazing. It's just amazing. We've talked about this a lot, but it's just amazing how much respect the guy has out here. It's from scouts, from other coaches, everyone you talk to says that team – well, you know, the first thing they talk about when they talk about Irvine, they've got Gillespie, you know, as if he's the big slugger in the middle of their lineup. I mean, he's that much of a factor there. It's unbelievable. You don't hear that about almost any other coach out there, you know. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, Wayne Graham maybe, or, you know, Mike Martin, you hear that about a little bit, but not even to that degree of he's that much of a direct impact on this individual game. You know, I mean, I remember watching Irvine in the regional in 2009, the regional of death with Strasburg and right. Virginia and Fresno, and you know, and Gillespie will you know, he'll move an outfielder into right behind second base if he needs to. He'll have 5 guys in the infield and 2 in the outfield. I mean, he'll do stuff like that. He's unconventional, and I remember it worked actually. He did that against Tommy Mendoza, and it worked. But he's unconventional. He does things, you know, his own way, and his guys play with a very distinct style. They're a tough team, you know. They're a little bit like Oregon State. They're a tough team to play against. They have one prospect, really. It's Matt Summers, their ace pitcher, who
has been a
converted center fielder who's just been in a groove, you know. And I mean, 2 weeks ago he threw a 3 weeks ago he threw a 2-hit shutout. The following week he threw a no hitter, and then last week he wasn't as good, but he was still solid in a win against Fresno State. So, I mean, this guy comes in here with some momentum, some confidence. You know, he's got a power arm. It'll be 93, 95 at times. It's a kind of a good power curveball, a downer pitch, mostly just those two pitches. But he gives them at least a chance against Virginia that first game. They play very well with him on the mound.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but he is also, like, he works exclusively out of the stretch.
That's right, exclusively out of the stretch, no windup. So, I mean, he's a very unusual guy, and it's a very short arm action. It's kind of deceptive, too. So, you know, he's tough.
Yeah, he is tough, and Irvine's tough. And I think the amazing thing about Coach Gillespie, I've always heard this, and my exposure to him started, you know, my first trip to the College World Series was his last, and USC's last national championship in 1998, so I got a chance to see him in regionals that year. They were at Clemson, so followed him in the last, you know, 16 regional year. They fought back to the loser's bracket to win that regional, which was a – talk about a regional of death. Brandon Inge was in that regional. Juan Pierre was in that regional, South Alabama, Brandon Inge of VCU. And those weren't the highest drafted players on their teams. They had higher drafted pitchers. You had Clemson, the host, which was a very good Clemson team in 1998. You had USC with Eric Munson, Seth Etherton, eventual national champions. That was a great regional, a lot of fun regional to cover. And then you get to Omaha, and you had Miami that was the number one national seed and was loaded. Long Beach State, that was a very good team. Dave Snow. Dave Snow is probably the other coach, if he got back into it, who's thought of with the same regard as Gillespie. And then, of course, yeah. SC went to Omaha in 2000 and 2001 with Mark Pryor. And it was so startling when SC fell off. And it was even more startling when Coach Gillespie got let go by Mike Garrett, who is well known for the good decisions that he made as his athletic director.
Oh, yeah,
a guy, the jerk store call, they ran out of Mike Garrett. But but I mean, this guy fires Mike Gillespie. And the crazy thing is that Mike Gillespie has always been known for me. Like, you don't talk X's and O's in baseball, but he's always been talked about as the X's and O's coach in college baseball. The guy who makes those moves, like you talked about, positioning his defense, doing some things unconventionally. And for me, he'll always be known as the guy who, in a 35-run game, in a 21-14 national championship game, the situation came up. And you talk about the Grand Illusion play in 1982, where all these things had to line up for Miami to run the Grand Illusion play against Wichita State. And everything lined up. The players on base at the right time, the right number of outs, the right count to the batter. For SC, everything lined up where they had the bases loaded, opposing team pitcher pitching the either out of the stretch or wind up, I forget what it was, the right count, and they triple steal with Morgan Ensberg. With Morgan Ensberg, one of the, let's be honest, one of the lesser color analysts of our time, but Morgan Ensberg, who was also a great college baseball player, a 2020 guy that year for USC, the 20th stolen base, was stealing home at the front end of a triple steal. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And a guy who was a big league all-star and had a great big league career, shorter, but his peak was awfully good. And Morgan Ensberg steals home at the front of a triple freaking steal. Have you ever seen a triple steal?
No.
And he didn't do – I never had either. He didn't just pull off a triple steal in a national championship game against a team they'd played six times already that year and in the national championship game that was where it was a 35-run game. I mean, you got to be kidding me. But not only did he call it, it worked. So that's always, to me, Mike Gillespie in a nutshell, is he is prepared. His teams are prepared for everything. Now, Aaron, are they prepared, though, for Danny Holson? Can they handle Virginia? Can they handle Virginia's grinded-out style? And you wrote about in the Super Regional Capsules, can their pitching staff contain a Virginia team that doesn't have gaudy numbers, but where the sum is greater than the whole of those parts in their offense.
It really is. I mean, that's a good way to describe it. The sum is greater than the whole. They are a very, very good offensive team. I think they're somewhere in the top 20 in the nation in scoring, and they do it without anybody who's got more than 7 or 8 home runs. I mean, that's Procia and Hicks, the two big guns in the middle of the lineup that I really like both those guys a lot. I think they're dangerous. And they have come up with a lot of clutch hits in their career. They're 3-year starters. Certainly you've got Nats up and down the order. I mean, John Barr, the quintessential number two hole. We had some good stuff on him in that super regional breakdown.
We did.
Keith Werman, of course, him and his 215 average. People still have high respect for that guy. He's a winning ball player. He's not having a very good season, but he's still a winning ball player. They've got the guy to me that stands out. I mean, Jared King is a player that nobody ever really heard anything about until this year. Now he's had a nice year for them at first base. David Coleman, they've got these veterans, Coleman and Schwab and Barr, all seniors in the infield who are waiting their turn. And as we've talked about, that team was so loaded last year.
Right.
They had guys who just didn't have a chance to play, and now they're playing this team is really experienced. They put a lot of pressure on you. I think they're just playing better on the mound. To me, that's the biggest thing when you compare them versus Irvine. I mean, Irvine has got one power arm, and he's not nearly as polished, for instance, as Holson. I mean, as we've talked about. And then after that, I mean, it's a bunch of softer guys. I think Virginia will be able to handle those guys. I mean, the lefty, Whitehouse. Virginia's got a very balanced lineup. I mean, there's 6 righties and 3 lefties who usually play.
Yeah.
They've got depth too. I mean, they've got versatility, but it's a tough assignment for Irvine to go out there and win that thing. Could they win it? Sure. I mean, it's a very experienced Irvine team. That's why I've liked this team all year long. All juniors and seniors in that lineup. There's not one underclassman who starts for them. And they're not going to be intimidated going out there. And kind of like Oregon State, I suspect they might play a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and they might relish that underdog role. So they could pull off the stunner. I mean, I'm not going to pick it, but it's possible.
I think them going to Virginia and winning that super regional would be the biggest upset out of all these super regionals. I think that would be the single biggest upset. I think the big difference, as you mentioned, is the pitching. And when you look at what Virginia's staff has done this year, they don't walk anybody and they strike out a ton of people. Their pitching staff has struck out twice as many batters. They have twice as many strikeouts as the pitching staff as their hitters have strikeouts. And I just think that's the big. And they also have this X factor in Tyler Wilson, a guy who's pitched in relief and who's pitched as a starter. And I have a feeling, especially Brian O'Connor, having been with Palminteri in the past, I think Oak is going to use Tyler Wilson as that moment of truth guy the rest of the postseason. He could start him if he needs to. Like if they're down 0-1 in a regional or an Omaha, in a super regional or an Omaha, they're going to use Tyler Wilson in that elimination game. You know what I'm saying? But if they're up 1-0 and Tyler Wilson goes into that swing role, it would not shock me if they used him in that Lewis Coleman role that LSU had in 2009, or in that just in that moment of truth role that we see a lot of guys. And he's versatile enough for that. He's a great X factor for them. And with Holson and Roberts, you've got two starters where you don't have to use Wilson as your number two, even though as a senior with stuff, you would think he is their number two guy. But I really like their pitching staff. I like their depth. I like Virginia, and I don't think it's a big shock that we're both picking Virginia there.
Yeah, I'm with you, and yeah, I would be surprised, I suppose, if they moved Wilson back into that role, but not shocked. But I mean, I just think that it's worked so well for them all year to have Holson and Wilson as the 1-2, and they do have Cody Winarski as a capable guy they could start if they needed to. But I just think their bullpen is so good that they don't really necessarily need to put Wilson back there. I mean,
Pretty sure they did
Klein, of
that for the
course.
ACC tournament, though, didn't they? I'm pretty sure he was in that role in the ACC tournament.
You would probably know better than I would, since you were at some of those games and I wasn't. So I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I have to go back and look at the boxes, but I thought that they used him kind of in that role in the ACC tournament and brought him out of the bullpen in one of those games. But yeah, like you said, I mean, they're deep enough with guys like Mayberry also and Klein, Kyle Crockett, who's gotten a lot of work for them and got some work for them out of their bullpen, an important leverage. Yeah, they did close Wilson though in the ACC tournament
Okay.
against Florida State. He came in the, I believe those were the, yeah, and that was the championship game, was it not? Yeah, I think
Okay,
he closed out that game in the bullpen. And that was only his second relief appearance of the year. So he's been in that kind of moment of truth role for them before here late in the season. I knew there was a he started against Wake Forest and then he closed against against Florida State. So I knew they'd used him in that role kind of, but it was to close out the ACC tournament. I knew I'd seen him in the out of the bullpen. So it wouldn't shock me if they used him in that role because their pitching is so deep. But I just think, like you said, I agree with you. On the mound is where Virginia is. That's a real separating factor between them and Irvine. Aaron, the Super Regional that you'll be at, you're going, correct?
yeah.
Dallas Baptist versus Cal at Santa Clara. We talked a little bit in the first podcast. It really seems like Aaron. So, what was Dallas Baptist's? What is we know the shortcoming at Cal is lights. What's the shortcoming at Dallas Baptist for them not hosting a super regional?
I think the facilities, first of all, it's small. I mean, everyone says they've got a beautiful playing surface. That's the strength of the facility, but it's small, and their press box, I guess, is really inadequate. I think they actually have lights there, so give them that. But it sounded like there wasn't really any way that they have the facilities to host a super regional there.
Well, to me, this is the most random. Now, I know there have to have been more than just one, but I know the only super regional I can remember that was 3 seed versus 3 seed was Southwest Missouri State against Ohio State back in 03, which one of, I think, two times when a Big Ten team has hosted a super regional. I think both times have been Ohio State. And in 1999, it was Fullerton at Ohio State. Well, I
You
think
had
Fullerton.
Michigan against Oregon. No, that was at
That was at
Corvallis.
O
I'm sorry.
State. Yeah, that was at Corvallis. And then you had SMS at the time, now Missouri State, at Ohio State in 2003. And, Southwest Missouri State, a team that, in retrospect, was pretty loaded with future big league pitchers. Brad Ziegler, Sean Markham, Jeff Gray's pitcher of the big leagues. There's one other guy, I forget. And then, of course, Bob Zimmerman was supposed to be their best prospect, and he didn't even make it to the big leagues. But I think they had four pitchers off that team who got to the major league. So that Missouri State team was pretty loaded. But yeah, I mean, that's the only time I can remember a 3 seed versus a 3 seed in a super regional. Have there been other 3 versus 3s?
None that comes to mind. You're right. This is a pretty unusual matchup. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I thought Cal was going to win that regional going in. You know,
You did. You pegged
that's
it.
one that I
Kudos.
picked. They barely won. I mean, they were down 3 runs in the ninth inning of the last game. They should have lost, because Baylor had, man, I felt terrible for Baylor. They self-destructed. You know, they made several really awful gaffes in that ninth inning that led to their demise. I mean, a
Yeah, I mean,
routine double play ball through a guy's legs and a botched rundown, and then Cal got a couple of timely hits, and that was it. But it was really dramatic.
it was dramatic, made more dramatic by the star of the regional, the Cal student broadcaster.
That's
Do we know
right.
his name?
I think it's Danny Freisinger.
He was awesome. I mean, this guy needs to have the Boom Goes the Dynamite guy be his color analyst for the super regional. But that was tremendous. It was just real. That was just great radio, and it was very dramatic. The video was very dramatic, and Baylor's history of not being able to come through when it matters is growing. But let's focus on the positives here instead of the negatives. Dallas Baptist, Aaron, just like a tale of two different clubs. It's a very offensive club, especially at home. But it sounds like they tailor their approach to they adjust their approach, I should say, when they're not playing in the cozy confines of whatever Dallas Baptist Field is called.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a team that can score runs, period. And I think they're very good at scoring runs at home. But their lineup is good because, for one thing, you've got a couple of switch hitters in there with Austin Elkins and Tyler Robbins. You've got four left-handed hitters, and you've got three right-handed hitters. So I mean, it's really good balance. You've got one of the nation's best players, period. I think in Jason Chrisom, the national record holder for doubles in a season, and
That
that guy has been
number looks like a typo. When you see his, you see 39 doubles, that really looks like a typo.
it's insane. And he's got 81 RBIs, and across the board it's great numbers. He's been a great hitter for them for 3 years, and it's this year he's just taken it to a different level with these bats too. It's pretty remarkable. He's kind of the real presence in the middle for them, but they've got good guys around him. I mean, it sounds like Joel Hutter's a real physical presence there. Duncan McAlpine, the catcher. They've got some guys at the top, who kind of make him go a little bit with Tyler Robbins and Landon Anderson, gives him some speed up there, and some tough outs. And this lineup is deep too. I mean, they're a very, very good offensive team.
I think that one of the things that impressed me about how good they are offensively is that, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't Haney their closer? Wasn't he a two-way guy in the past?
Yeah, he was.
And I thought he was their catcher. He was like an offensive catcher before. They've replaced him, obviously, with McAlpine, who's obviously very good. But Haney was horrible on the mound last year. And this year, not only has he been good, he's been a workhorse.
Yeah.
So they have, a difference maker in the back of their bullpen as well, which I don't think you can win a national championship without at least a pretty good bullpen. And
Right.
it seems like they have a guy who can be a factor for them in multiple games in this super regional. But to me, it really does seem like, just looking at their numbers and not knowing them as well as you do, obviously, but if Stafford and Williamson aren't good, they don't have nearly the starting pitching depth, or there's nearly overall pitching depth that Cal has.
Exactly. Yeah, it's Cal just has a Cal's a lot more arms and power arms, and Dallas Baptist has one guy at the front who's got a really quality arm in Brandon Williamson. One guy at the back who's got a power arm with Chris Haney. Both those guys are low 90s types. Haney will run up there 94, I think. But and they've got really Dallas Baptist has five guys that they trust, and that's it. I mean, Cal's got lots of power arms in the staff. They've got power arms in the bullpen. That to me is the separator. I just think Cal's arms are better. I mean, Eric Johnson, their ace, was a second round pick, and I really like that guy. I mean, he's you can beat him. You can short game him. You can run on him, it sounds like, but he's good. I mean, he's got a really firm fastball that I think he locates pretty well. Sliders are really good pitch. I mean, it's like an 86, 87 mile an hour, kind of almost a cutter, but it's got a lot of movement to it too. It's got some depth. He'll mix in the curveball once in a while to keep you off balance, and he's got a good changeup. he's a good four pitch guy. I mean, I know Justin Jones isn't a premium velocity guy, but you know he's pitching a lot of games for them.
He's
got his curveball going.
Yeah, he's a lefty with feel, and he throws a lot of strikes.
He's got to have the curveball. To me, that's the key to Justin Jones. If he's got a good curveball going, if he can command it, then he can be very effective.
Aaron, another thing that struck me about Dallas Baptist after reading your capsule last night, I went into our preseason questionnaire, and they have a guy in Jared Stafford who's, you know, second on the team in innings pitched and wins. He leads the team in ERA among their starters. Here's a guy that basically they've tried to push into a secondary role, but he just keeps on keeping on. And he's a guy who's like a low to mid-80s fastball guy. He's just like exactly the kind of guy who ties up teams that are full of prospects. You know? Like Cal.
He's 79 to 83 is what he is. And Bob Keller, their pitching coach, says he looks like SpongeBob SquarePants. You know, that's the physical comp for this guy. But he goes in there and carves him up. I mean, like he did in the regional, was it Oklahoma or TCU? He beat one of those two teams and just drove them crazy. And he's done that all year. I mean, he just drives teams crazy. He's just a softer guy. It takes a long time to adjust to him. He's got really good command. He mixes four pitches and then he counts. You've got to be very disciplined against him. So that'll be a major test for Cal, I assume, in that second game. Because, you know, I think Cal's a pretty patient club offensively. I mean, they're aggressive, but they don't get themselves out too much. I mean, they've got some guys who work the count. But, you know, this guy is something, you know, you don't see these kind of guys very often.
It's just a fascinating super regional. And for either of these programs, excuse me, it could make such a long-term impact. I mean, for Cal, it's about obviously a team that was on the brink of elimination as a program, and they had to raise all this money, raise so much awareness, and now if you go and push through to Omaha for the first time since 1992, I think it is, I mean, back when John Zuber played for that team, I mean, what could mean long-term for Cal. And then for Dallas Baptist, I got to think that if you win this Super Regional and you go to Omaha, they're going into the Missouri Valley Conference next year as a baseball affiliate. You're talking about a program that makes a quantum leap from nice curiosity to, oh my God, they're in the College World Series. What an ad that is for the university. Yeah. How much do you think this means? Who does this mean more to as a program, Aaron?
Oh boy, that's tough. I suppose Cal, only because, again, they were on the brink of elimination. And, you know, to get through to the College World Series, you know, I mean, I still feel like they're on a little bit of shaky ground. I mean, they had to come up with this whole strategic plan for the future and sustainability and all this stuff. I mean, getting to the College World Series would probably give them a little bit more security. Whereas Dallas Baptist, you know, their program is on the rise, regardless of what happens this weekend. But I do think that you're right. This Super Regional might be the most important Super Regional out of any of them,
yeah,
as far as the state of these programs. I mean,
yeah.
The one that wins this thing gets to make a major leap.
I think Cal's going to win this thing. I think that the fire that I thought had been missing a little bit, and I'm sure I'm just oversimplifying from afar, but where it seemed like they lost a little luster, a little bit of that extra oomph that they had after the program was reinstated in early April. It's like getting their backs up against the wall in their regional rekindled that. And I'm looking at Pac-10 Player of the Year Tony Renda to lead the Bears to Omaha. What do you have, Aaron? Who are you picking?
I'm going to stick with Cal. I had them as an Omaha team coming into this tournament.
You did.
I will stick with that. I mean, I think that you're right. You know, the way that they responded with their backs really, really up against the wall you know, and they got some help. Certainly, you know, we can't give them all the credit, but they also capitalized and they had the big hits. And Devin Rodriguez came through with that big two-run single with the bases loaded to beat Baylor. Dave Esker said his team doesn't do anything easy. That's for sure. He said that before that last game. They don't do anything easy, but they've been doing it. And I just, you know, as I said before, I really like their talent. I like the way they're constructed. I think they're a balanced team. I think they're more offensive than the numbers indicate, and I think they're good. So I'm going to stick with Cal.
I am as well. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. So we probably got to go a little quicker here. I'm sorry, but having too much fun talking college baseball with you as usual. Florida State, Texas A&M. The simple answer here is home team should be favored when these two teams play. Should they not? But it seems like the home field matters so much to both these clubs.
I think that's very true. Yeah, I mean, we obviously know how good Florida State has traditionally been at home. It plays to its ballpark dimensions. It certainly feeds off its crowd, great college baseball crowd there. And A&M also feeds off its crowd at home. I mean, a very emotional team. That program has been like that ever since Childress got there. They play with emotion, and they feed off that energy that they have at home. So I kind of like, the way A&M is coming into this thing, again, maybe with a chip on their shoulder. I feel like this is a program that plays well with a chip on its shoulder. They're without John Stilson. Probably a lot of people wrote him off. I kind of wrote him off. I thought they were
Sure.
going to lose their regional to Arizona, and Arizona pushed them to the edge, but they showed character by getting that win. I mean, it probably helped. It helped both teams to have that extra day to bring back their aces, and Michael Wacha really responded. I wonder, who's going to start the opener now? I haven't checked on that. Wacha pitched on Tuesday. I mean, I guess, do you bring him back on short rest to pitch on Saturday, or do you go with Stripling, who pitched just in relief on Tuesday? Either way, those two guys, those guys are the key for A&M. I mean, those guys can carry them through, and they're going to have to do that.
It seems like that does give an advantage to Florida State. More rest time. They clearly have it lined up the way they want it as far as, and they've got their guy, Sean Gilmartin, lined up ready to go. How does A&M match up against a left-hander like Gilmartin? Obviously, he's very good, but how do they match up generally against left-handers?
I think they're fair against left-handers. I mean, they've only got three lefties in the lineup with Jacob House and Kenny Jackson and Tyler Naquin. And I think Naquin's a good enough hitter that he can handle lefties. Of course, Gilmartin, he's really good against lefties and righties. I mean, he's got a great changeup for right-handed hitters. His location is really good, and he pitches to your weakness
Yeah, the
as a hitter, as we wrote in the Super Regional breakdown.
amazing thing to me, Aaron, is that Florida State does a pretty nice job controlling the running game in general. Opposing teams only have been successful on 58% of stolen base attempts off them. Rafael Lopez has done a really nice job. He's thrown out about 44% of guys. Nobody runs on Gilmartin. There are only three stolen bases against him all year in four attempts. Not a lot of base runners.
Wow.
Not a lot of base runners, but as a lefty who's so athletic, he really controls the running game, and that seems like it's such a huge part of what A&M does. Also, to me, isn't Florida State's ballpark fairly cozy? It doesn't seem like speed is as big of a factor at Florida State's ballpark as maybe it might be in a bigger park like Olsen
Yeah,
Field.
that's fair to say. I mean, it is cozy, especially to right field. And if you've got opposite field power as a right-handed hitter, you can take advantage of that. That's what Florida State does so well there. And it kind of negates, having a premium defensive right fielder like Tyler Naquin when you've got a smaller outfield. I mean, it's still nice to have, but I think that it's not as important.
If I felt better about Florida State's pitching, this would be an easy pick for me. I'm still picking the Seminoles. I feel like Gilmartin plus Johnny Holstaff should be enough for them, especially in their home ballpark. I have a hard time picking them to lose a Super Regional at home. I know it's happened before, but I'd feel better about it if it were a healthy Stilson and a on his rest Michael Wacha going in there and two power arms and really putting the smackdown on Florida State's offense. North Carolina went in there and won a series at Florida State. Clemson went in there without premium pitching and went in there and won a series at Florida State. Florida State's been mortal at home this year, but I just have a feeling that this year's Florida State team is not going to be mortal at home. I'm picking the Seminoles to win the Super Regional.
Yeah, this was a tough one for me. I went back and forth, but ultimately I just have a feeling about A&M, and I can't quite put my finger on it. I like their arms better even without John Stilson. I mean, that's a statement. When even without losing your number one guy who was a first round pick, they've
Yeah.
still got they still got a pitching edge in this series. Not in the first game against Gilmartin, but whoever they throw in the first game. We'll at least give them a chance. And then in the second game, you give A&M the edge. And the third game, I mean, really, they're both looking at probably Holstaff in that situation. But it's I don't know. I like the way A&M's playing. I kind of like the fact that they got pushed a little bit in their regional. I think it made them have to dig deep a little bit. They haven't. This is a program that hasn't been to Omaha since I think
1999.
1989.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they. I think they're hungry. I think this, this is the year for them to finally get over that hump. I'm going to go with A&M.
I think it's a good pick. I mean, I'm very tempted to pick A&M myself. Dadgummit, I just can't pick against 11. The slow walk. I think there's going to be a slow walk to Omaha for the Seminoles this year, for the Seminole Nation. But that's Florida State's pitching has given me pause all year on them, and it still gives me pause now. And if they lose the first game with Gil Martin on the mound, that would be the biggest shock of all time if they lost with Gil Martin and then won the last two games of a super regional without him. I mean, that'd be crazy. I don't see them getting to Omaha without Sean Gil Martin lifting the whole team on his back for at least one of those games. Last super regional, Aaron, UConn, South Carolina. Now, in the preseason, Aaron breaks every team down on the 2080 scale in a variety of categories in our college preview issue. I think it's like the coolest thing you do. And the in the whole breakdown, the spreadsheet, we lovingly refer to it here in the office as the Fit Matrix. And Aaron, the Fit Matrix loved UConn to start the year.
Yeah.
Was UConn, correct me if I'm wrong, they were number two or number three in the Fit Matrix to start the year, right?
I'm going to pull that up while we talk because I'm curious. They were very high.
I know in the preseason, in our preseason ranking, South Carolina was number seven. UConn was number nine, right ahead of Clemson at number 10, the team that UConn just went and beat in a super regional on the road after losing the first game with their first-round pick on the field. So I know you feel some vindication, rightly so, for UConn winning a regional on the road. I think a lot of SEC fans are still going to say, well, they beat an ACC team, so what is it? It's not that big of a deal. And I have jokingly referred to Clemson as New England's team over the years. So in a way, they kind of beat another New England team in Clemson,
exactly.
A team with a lot of New Englanders on. I mean, they beat Weissman, and they beat they beat a lot of Massachusetts guys and Vermont guys when they won that regional. But how did UConn stack up on the Fit Matrix compared to the Gamecock at the end of the year?
I'm looking at it now. Florida was number one. UConn was number two in the Fit Matrix, just the raw scores of 2080 scores across the board. And South Carolina was number three. They were actually, they had high scores. The Fit Matrix tries to incorporate intangibles, and South Carolina had a 70 or 75 for that. And then, bullpen, South Carolina had a 75. So those things kind of lifted South Carolina. And lo and behold, I think those have been the strengths of this South Carolina team. So
intangibles and bullpen, those were some of their strengths last year, and those are their strengths again this year. And I guess their other strength, Aaron, is just defensively.
Yeah.
This team has just become – they're like Creighton. They're like Creighton defensively almost. I mean, they're almost – or Virginia or Texas. They're really just like a half step or a quarter step below – the top teams in the country as far as defensive efficiency.
The thing that I do want to mention, though, I like Peter Mooney at shortstop. He'll make the spectacular play sometimes, and he generally makes the routine play. But he's not as reliable as Bobby Haney was last year. He'll make some errors. To me, he's not as good as Nick Ahmed at shortstop, for instance, at UConn. So that's one thing to keep in mind. They've been a little bit banged up behind the plate with Brady Thomas, but I think they like Robert Berry back there. He does a probably better job controlling running games. But Thomas, that's the guy that Rothery likes to throw to. So I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do with their catching. It might just be kind of a gut feel thing. But and also, the outfield isn't as good as it was when they had Jackie Bradley. I mean, he was the best defensive outfielder in college baseball. So you take him out of the mix, instead of having Marzilli as a premium, almost premium defender on a corner. He becomes your center fielder. He's pretty good out there. He covers some ground. But now you've got, Stephen Neff in left and Jake Williams or Adam Matthews in right. Or, there's different combinations. They've kind of patched together their outfield all year. But it's just it's a little bit different. It's on paper, you look at it, UConn is the more talented team. I think that is true.
I think so, too. I agree.
They had 10 players drafted. They had two first rounders. They had Nick Ahmed. The shortstop was a second rounder. They've got lots of upperclassmen on this team. I mean, seven of their nine starters are juniors and seniors. They've got a senior guy on Saturday, Greg Napo, who's the all-time winningest pitcher in their program's history. Mike Nemeth, a senior, is their all-time hits leader. So they've got those guys. They've got the superstars with Springer and Barnes. They're a dangerous club.
Yeah, they're really good. I didn't realize I had 10 guys drafted here, and And the other part of this, I think the other factor here is, like you mentioned with South Carolina's, Stephen Neff has stepped in and been like a nice little role player for them, playing some left field, some DH. He strikes out a lot, but he's third on their team in home runs. He's got 5 home runs, so he's been a factor. I think Matthews is a huge X factor for them. I mean, he was drafted. I don't remember that if he was drafted very high, but I had a couple scouts tell me that straight up tools wise, he was the best prospect on their team in terms of just raw tools. You know, he had more tools than Jackie Bradley Jr. or Jackie Bradley. And he doesn't have Jackie Bradley's play ability. He'd never hit with the old bats like Bradley had. And this year he's battled the hamstring issues. I don't remember if he played in the regional or not. I know he came back and pinch hit some in the SEC tournament. Looks like he's coming back. Looks like he's going to play this weekend. What kind of a factor he'll be, I'm not sure. He seems like he's kind of an X factor. But to me, it seems like South Carolina really has Christian Walker's the one guy you got to pitch around. And George Springer has a little more help with Nemeth and a healthier Nick Ahmed. And it didn't feel like UConn really found its stride until Nick Ahmed came back from that collapsed lung. And obviously they lost in the Big East tournament to Seton Hall, but Seton Hall was red hot and yeah. playing great and won a game out in regional as well out at A&M. I think UConn's going to pull this off. I'm picking the Huskies to win this super regional and go to Omaha. I think it's UConn's year. They won a national championship in basketball. They went to a BCS bowl in baseball. It would be a pretty ridiculous year, and I think ESPN's going to help UConn get every single freaking call in this super regional. I'm kidding about that last part, but I'm kidding on the square. So to use a Al Franken phrase, I'm picking UConn, Aaron, just because I think they're the better team. I'll tell you, South Carolina is a great team, and they have more than intangibles. They do have real talent, but I think UConn is a little tested. It'll be interesting. It'll definitely make me look bad if I think this is going to be a really fascinating test of SEC and ACC. I think we know that the SEC is a better league, but UConn to go down in a more difficult situation of the meat grinder of a regional, and you lose your first game and to come back and beat Coastal and Clemson, that's harder than just going to South Carolina and trying to win 2 out of 3. Even with Omaha on the line, I think that's actually harder. But we'll see, because, I mean, South Carolina is South Carolina, and their belief is their best tool.
And if I'm not mistaken, UConn did not have to bring back Matt Barnes on short rest to win that regional. I think they only used him in that Friday game, which is nice.
He hasn't pitched in relief all year, and unless he came back in the Clemson game and started that game, which I don't believe.
No, that was Greg Napo who started the last game. So,
right.
That's a nice little edge. I mean, you know, it's amazing that they were able to do that without bringing him back. I mean, A&M had to bring back their guy, and you know, Arizona brought back a lot of people bring back their guys in the decisive game. I always object to that, but they do.
Yeah,
it.
They do.
UConn didn't, and you know, Barnes is fresh and ready, and I think he probably, you know, now that the draft is over. It probably helps him and Springer a little bit. And, I mean, you know, everybody who gets drafted, I mean, it helps to have that over with. But I think he's got a little bit something to prove after losing last week. I think he's going to come out and pitch very well. It's a tough setting. You know, it's a tough place to play against a really, really good college baseball team that just finds ways to beat you.
The other thing that I like about UConn is that, you know, Clemson in the game, the 7-6 game, the game where UConn was losing, rallied, took the lead, blew the lead, won in the bottom half of the ninth. It wasn't their main guys. George Springer got walked. Scott Weissman got Mike Nemeth out. But then Ryan Fuller comes through. It's not just the stars. I mean, that's the thing, is that UConn is more than just the 2 first-round picks and Ahmed.
Right.
It was the whole deal. It was the whole team. And that's where my faith comes from. I guess I'm picking Muzzilli over Marzilli as well.
I love the way UConn's constructed, you know, with the couple of power guys in the middle, the RBI guys with Springer, Nemeth, and Fuller, who's gotten a lot of big hits for them. He's had a really nice year. And then they've got a lot of speed throughout the team. They run a lot. They're among the national leaders in stolen bases, as we thought they would be. John Andreoli and Billy Farriter and LJ Muzzilli, all those guys can run. And, of course, so can Springer and Ahmed. It's a balanced lineup. I think it's crucial for them really to get off to an early lead. I agree with that part of the assessment from our super regional capsules. I think they really need to get off to a good start. In a close game, with South Carolina's bullpen, with Matt Price back there, I think they need to make Matt Price a non-factor.
Agree,
if they can,
completely. Yep.
By getting off to a good start early. They're a very right-handed team. You know, they're going to see a lot of changeups from Michael Roth. They got to be patient. They got to go the other way with it. They can do that. It's tough. Boy, I feel uncomfortable picking against South Carolina at home. That team is a winner. They've beaten Florida. They beat Vanderbilt. They beat everybody. But I'm going to take UConn.
Wow, we're both taking UConn. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Can't believe I just did a Mike Patrick impersonation, but it happened. So that's the only one that we disagree about is the one in Tallahassee. I just feel like I feel almost silly picking against South Carolina as well. I mean, I think there's a I don't understand why I'm picking against South Carolina, except that I just have that kind of belief in UConn. And maybe it's almost more like I'm wanting it to happen and not at the expense of the Gamecocks, because I have tremendous respect for their program. But I just think it would be a great thing for college baseball if a Northeast team made it to Omaha. And this is the Northeast team to do it. Not because they're UConn, but because they have all these draft guys, two first-round picks, a second-round pick. And just like you said, the way they're constructed. And because the talent in the Northeast is in a peak cycle. 2008 yeah. and 2011, those draft classes were ridiculous. I got a spreadsheet from a scout the other day who talked about how this was an unbelievable peak year for the Northeast, the number of players drafted. And that just has to matter. The talent has to matter. And South Carolina has great talent, and they marry great talent with great intangibles. But I hate picking against Michael Roth at home. I have a hard time thinking that Matt Barnes is not going to just shove it, you know, in Super Regional because he was so bad in the regional against Coastal. I have a feeling that's just not going to happen again, and that they've got enough after that to make it happen. But that's the most compelling Super Regional to me. It's two great teams. I think it's one team that I think it's going to be thought of as this massive upset if UConn wins it, and it's just really not. It'll be an upset. Yeah. It'll be an upset. But the talent on the field is very even. And, I think it'd be great for the sport. Forgive me for wanting the sport to be more national. You know, people criticize us a lot because it's like we want good things to happen for the Northeast or the Midwest, but it's – you know, it'd be good for the sport if it was more of a national sport. There's just no two ways right. about that, Aaron. So, but South Carolina, if South Carolina went out there and just beat them two games in a row, that would be, I think, a lot more impressive than people want. I don't think people would give South Carolina as much credit for that as they deserve. Beating UConn, frankly, is almost as big of a deal as beating Vanderbilt and beating Florida in a series. It's not quite, but it's right there. UConn's talent level is right at that level.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Vanderbilt had 12 players drafted. That's an SEC record. How many did you say UConn had drafted? 10?
10.
So, I mean, that just tells you all you need to know right there. I don't see any other SEC teams other than I don't think Vanderbilt had two first-rounders. I don't see any SEC teams walking around with two first-round picks this year. Maybe next year.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Maybe next year, but not this year. So, UConn's that good, and so is South Carolina. That's going to be fascinating.
Sounds like we're both trying to talk ourselves into this pick, though, still, doesn't it? I mean, it is bold
to
pick against South Carolina, and we might both look like dopes because South Carolina in the last 2 years, I've looked like a dope. But
who would you not – if UConn at anybody else, who would you not have picked UConn to beat this weekend? I think the only team I would have picked them not to beat is Florida. I might even have picked them to beat Vanderbilt this weekend. I might have done that.
I probably still would have picked Florida, Vanderbilt, maybe Virginia. I mean, those are the really elite teams.
And that's the thing. It's not a sign of disrespect for South Carolina. It's a sign of respect for UConn.
And South Carolina doesn't have its best player. I mean, Bradley Jr. is their best player, their best all-around player. Didn't have their best year, but it would have been great to have had Springer and Bradley in the same center field in the same Super Regional. That would have been awesome.
Those guys might have like left their glove in the outfield for the other one to use that inning.
Yeah,
I mean, aren't they kind of boys from last summer with Team USA?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, they played together.
I mean, that would have been really, really neat to have those guys in the same field. But just a tremendous Super Regional. I want to remind people that this weekend on BaseballAmerica.com, we've obviously given the draft its due all week, and we're going to have we Super Regional capsules are rolling out, podcast. I feel like we've given college baseball its due this week as well. But this weekend, Aaron, we're going to have team coverage of Super Regionals on BaseballAmerica.com. You'll be at Santa Clara for the Cal-Dallas Baptist Super. You'll be wrapping up all the other Supers. We'll have staffers, probably Teddy Cahill writing the stories, our super intern for the spring, covering the doing the gamers for the UNC-Stanford Super Regional. And Jimmer Schonard, our own Jimmer, the Jimmer Fredette of our office, Jim Schonard, in Columbia, where Andrew Kiddick has rolled out the garnet carpet for Jim Schonard, who was there for the regional, will be there for the Super Regional. So we're going to have pretty massive team coverage of Super Regionals. I don't remember that have we ever covered three Super Regionals before?
That's a good question. I don't know that we have.
I don't think we have. So it's going to be kind of unprecedented. So it's going to be just a massive – I just can't even explain my pride in our staff here at Baseball America with the volume of content and the quality of content in the month of June. But between the draft and our college stuff – it's really neat to sit back as the somebody who's been here as long as I've been and to just kind of take it in a little bit, drink it in, and just take some pride in it and to enjoy it. And I hope people enjoy it as well, because obviously we're doing it for baseball fans. We're not doing it for our own edification, but we're doing it for people who are passionate about the game. And if you listen to these podcasts, you're passionate about the game, and I hope you pick up on Aaron's passion and my passion and how much we love college baseball, and this is a great weekend. So let's drink it in, Aaron. The next time we do a podcast, it's going to be in person. We'll see you in Omaha next Thursday. Actually, we'll probably do one before that. Who am I kidding? And then we're going to do some video in Omaha again next week for the 2011 College World Series. So I'm really looking forward to it, looking forward to seeing you in Omaha, and I'll talk to you in the during Super Regionals all weekend.
Enjoy Chapel Hill, John. That should be a great one. And I'm really excited about this weekend. Just to echo what you said, great group of matchups, a lot of compelling storylines. It's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun. And I hope all of our college baseball fans out there enjoy it as well. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you all weekend on the College Blog, and we'll talk to you next week on the Baseball America podcast. Until next time, so long, everybody.